In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. And Sarah, we are being blessed with the guests recently. It's a magical time.
I'm obsessed. I know. Yeah, we've had so many great guests. I'm so excited. I feel like she's truly like a true crime icon extraordinaire. I think we all have a little bit of aspirational.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm stammering.
Set the bar low.
Yes. Okay. You're right. Just a person. We're so excited to have Deanna, aka you probably know her as Body Movin' from Don't Fuck with Cats.
Hello.
Yes. How are you?
I'm great. I'm exhausted, but I'm great.
Perfect combo.
I'm fighting crime.
Well, Crime Con was last weekend, and I'm still like kind of getting over it because it was just like 4 days of. Just a lot, you know? And so it takes me a long time to recover. I'm a bit of an introvert and, you know, having to be on the entire 4 days is a little exhausting emotionally. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's real.
What's it like to kind of be thrown into and being a part of this larger true crime community now after
the
documentary?
Well, I'm a true crime fan, right? So, I mean, I like one of my heroes is Michelle McNamara.
Yeah.
And so this weekend I got to meet like Paul Holes, and that was, I was so like awestruck that I kind of embarrassed myself, but it's okay. You know, it's okay. You know, and like Keith Morrison, I mean, just so being able to meet people who I've kind of looked up to. Listen, if I wasn't a speaker at Crime Con, I would have paid to go because there's the people that attend and whatnot are just so fabulous. And I've known Billy Jensen for like 8 years. I've known him, and I got to meet him finally in person. It was just really great.
I love that.
And I
he's
like
so
the,
fun.
Oh, he really is. He wrote our, he's the reason we have the Netflix show. Really?
Wow.
Really? How come?
Well, he wrote, back when, all this was like, happening.
Mm-hmm.
He contacted me and asked if he could write an article about what we were doing. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And it was for the Rolling Stone magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And from that article, producer started kind of going, oh, that's an interesting story. Let's start, you know, trying to do something. It took many years and we turned a lot of things down. But yeah, finally the right one came along.
I was going to ask you about that process, honestly, because I was curious about it. What made you all kind of feel like I trust these producers and I trust Netflix, and kind of walk through like maybe some deals that you were like, this I feel like is not going to be what we wanted.
It's really interesting. You think you would, okay. So a lot of the producers, cause that's who contacts you, a producer, not Netflix, right? So lots of producers would contact us and say, we want to do a documentary, you know, about Luca, or, you know, kind of word it that way. And it was just immediately, no, we're not. Well, Raw, who is who we ended up going with, Raw TV, their approach was, we want to do a story about the investigation. We want to do a story about what happened, not about him. And we were like, okay, yeah, you know. So we had a couple stipulations, like we didn't want him to be in it. And they were like, of course, you know,
fair. Yeah, fair.
we wanted like a really fair tribute to Jin Lin. And of course we did that, you know, but then his friend Benjamin, decided to join. And so it was much more appropriate for, you know, his friend to talk about Jin Lin. He knew him. I mean, they were friends. And they were like totally on board with that. They were like, yep, 100% we can do that. In fact, that's something that we want to do anyway. I mean, they already had like our pulse kind of, Like, we didn't really want to give him all the attention. We wanted it to be more about us, not even about us, because there's like no backstory about body moving. You know, you don't meet my mom.
I mean,
or my
I feel
dog.
There is, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, right. there's no like, you know, what I like to do in my free time. Well, I guess it kind of is what I like to do in my free time. You know, there's no, it's not about me or John Green, you know, it's about what the investigation entails.
Yeah.
So, and that was their approach. And we finally were like, yeah, okay, we'll do it. But at the same time, we also were like, man, this is never going to happen because it takes years, years to go through a production process. I really didn't know they were going to really do it for sure until they showed up at my house. And then we had to go to another house to film. Yeah. And even like the day before they showed up, I still didn't like register that it was happening.
It must have been a surreal moment. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And because what happened was they came out and they did like a pre-interview with me. They came out from London and they sat at my kitchen table and they pulled out this big book, and I swear it was this thick, and it was a 3-ring binder. And they had all these notes and screenshots, and they knew the case almost as much as I did. And that's why I was like, okay, these are the people. These are the people that we're going to be working with. And they were fabulous. So yeah, that's why we chose them.
It's a good level of trust and also understanding, because I understand what you mean by wanting it to be more about the investigation, because that's what you can speak to more accurately, because you're like, that's what I'm entrenched in, that's what I'm doing. And I feel like also as true crime viewers and people that are into it, it was a very interestingly well done documentary, because it's people that are always, that's kind of like, oh wow, these people are solving this case on their own. It's sort of like what everybody kind of like hopes to try
that's
to do
what
to help
we all
bring something
want to try to do exactly right. When we're like watching a documentary or like researching a case,
the puzzle, right?
Yes.
It is such a puzzle.
It is. And that was another thing too, was I'm a true crime fan. And like, I want to know like forensics. I want to know profiling. I want to know like that. I don't want to know necessarily about the murderer at all. I don't really care about him. I want to know, or her. I want to know about the forensics, the evidence, you know, that's what I want. That's what I like. So I was kind of coming at it from like my perspective as a true crime fan, thinking that, you know, everybody's like me, which is, you know, not true, but I don't know. I just thought that coming at it from an investigation angle rather than, you know, Luca's backstory and why he is the way he is and the whatever. I didn't want any part of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want any part of that.
Yeah. Cause I feel like, honestly, how much does that really matter? It's like this person did such a heinous thing and you know,
I'm not about to sit there and talk for three. Well, cause filming took like 6 days. I'm not there. Oof. I'm not going to sit there and talk about Luca for 6 days.
And cause I'm curious, cause you enjoyed the production company and you really waited until you found producers that you kind of trusted. How did you feel after the fact? Like, did you feel you were portrayed in a way that you expected? Was there any surprises with the editing or anything like that? Your dog answered. What did you?
So I was a little surprised. So first of all, how they made me appear is like exactly how I am. So no surprises there. They didn't abuse my trust or anything like that. They did great. One thing they did, and I don't know why, so if you see the documentary, you know, his mom comes on and says, Manny is real, you know, the python snake video, there's another set of hands in the video. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not true. And so, you know, all of my inbox is full of, who's the second hands then, body moving, you know, whatever. Well, the reality of the situation is that video with the hands, the second hands, was released weeks and weeks later. It's not part of the original video.
Oh.
It was released weeks and weeks later, and it was like the neighbor who was like picking up her snake.
Hmm.
Like it wasn't even part of the video. Like it.
Yeah.
So that was the only thing, and I don't know why they did that. I think it was to create like a
Why would they leave that in?
Yeah, I was gonna ask about that. Yeah. Right.
So, well, his mom this is mom. His mom's dense, right? So she doesn't know anything. So, well, listen, she's a mom. Like, I don't hate her or whatever.
Like a blind trust for their kids.
Yeah, she's a mom, right? So that was one thing. Another thing that really irritated me about the show. In the show, Luca murders Junlin. And then we find he's in Montreal. That's how they portray it. Mm-hmm. We found he was in Montreal 3 months before the murder. And we went to the police department because he had released other videos. And we went to the Montreal police department and they were like, you know, you really got to come in person. We can't do this, you know? And we're like, well, we don't live in Canada. And they're like, yeah, we need somebody local that, you know, we can deal with. So we like recruited somebody from Montreal to go to the police station for us. And they did. And the police were like, okay, we're going to go to like a special prosecutor, try to get a warrant. Because at this point he had started to threaten to kill people. So we were frantic. We got to get like someone to knock on his door, find out what's going on. Like, you know, with his mental state, you know, that kind of thing. The special prosecutor was not able to secure a warrant. And they were like, sorry, kids, nothing we could do. And that was 3 months before the murder. So the way the documentary makes it sound is that I did all that after the murder, but it was before, which makes it even more tragic.
Yeah,
completely.
So, I mean, other than that, though, like everything else was like correct.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So I had one question when I was watching the documentary, and I mean, I watched this when it came out, so maybe my memory is fuzzy, but when you guys had the videos of Luca, but you didn't really know who he was, what his name was, and you got a message that said, you know, this is Luca Magnotta, mm-hmm. like who was that? Who kind of gave you that name? Do you think it was just one of his like million profiles?
Okay. I'll give you one guess.
My guess was him.
Yeah. So what happened with that is there were basically two groups of people. There was my group who were working in private and like nobody could see our work. And then there was like this huge public group that everybody could see. And we weren't responsible for the public group. We were just members. And the big public group had been talking in secret with this Jamsy person, right? And the Jamsy Cramslot in his ass person. And he was trolling them. Like, yeah, it was me. I like to kill kittens. You know, he was trolling them. And we didn't know what was going on. We're doing our own thing. And they made this big announcement in this big public group that they found the kitten killer. And it was this Jamsy Cramslot in his ass. And this is shown in the documentary, but, you know, John Green and I are like, what? No. Okay. Well, at the same time, we knew that Luca's sock puppets were in this big public group. So our theory is that this pissed Luca off, that this troll was taking all his attention. And so he sent out messages to many people, not just me or, you know, the girl, other girl that got it in our group, but several other people, and it was the same message. It was him. It was 100% him.
So that kind of worked out almost to like flush him out a bit.
I know, right? Yeah, it kind of did. And, you know, I don't think we would have found who he was otherwise, honestly. I mean, we had it narrowed down to like northeastern North America. We had it kind of narrow. But I mean, it could be anybody.
Yeah, that's still such a needle in a haystack.
The other part about that is that I really believe part of Luca's psyche is that he believes he's famous. Like, it's something that he really believed. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think another part of him thought that we would recognize him, you know?
Oh, so it was
interesting.
I really do. I wrote like a 15 page, like, I don't want to say profile because that would be insulting to profilers, but like a 17 page, like, document on his
debrief. Yeah.
Right. And this was before he was captured and before anybody knew who he was. And part of it is that I really do believe he was delusional in the sense that he thought he was recognizable. So I don't think he thought it would take any time for anybody to figure out who he was.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Obviously, you jumped in so much into his psyche and understanding him. Was this the first kind of case or crime that you really dug into? Or were there any before that kind of just like led to dead ends or something like that?
This was the first one I participated in, but I had just finished watching, your audience can Google this one. It was the Wolfie Blackheart case in San Antonio, I think. And it happened on 4chan, and that's where I kind of watched it. And all I did was watch. I did not participate. But what ended up happening was this picture was posted of a hand. Like, all you could see was a hand. And it was a dog head.
Oh.
And everyone went nuts on 4chan. And using the exif data from the picture, they were able to kind of triangulate where this person was. And then they verified it with like MySpace pictures. That's how old this case was.
Wow.
I mean, MySpace, all this stuff happened in 2010, you guys. Like, so.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. None of forget.
None of the tools that are available now were available to us then. OSINT was like nothing, right?
You didn't even know like phones could track anything or anything like
right,
that.
Right, yeah.
Didn't even have the tech, yeah.
Right. So anyway, they found this girl on 4chan within like maybe 2 days, I want to say. And I watched it all happen and I would go to sleep and I would get up in the morning and say, oh, what's going on? And I would go look. And I found myself fascinated by the tracking down. And I think that was in February of 2009, I think. I might be, it was 2009. Maybe February 2010. And then the Luca thing popped up in December of 2010. So I had just kind of watched all this happen. And John Green had watched the Dusty the Cat incident happen on 4chan, where this kid was abusing his cat and they found him.
Oh my gosh.
So we both separately, you know, we didn't know each other, had come off of these, you know, watching these collective group of people find an animal, you know, herder person, animal abuser. I can't even talk. Herder person? What the heck is that? Animal herder person. An animal abuser. And so we kind of had that mindset where, oh, here's something that we can maybe work on now that we've kind of seen these other two things happen. So Luca, or that case, was the first one we did together. Since then, we've done 15 to 20 other cases.
Wow.
Because we're still kind of, you know, doing stuff. We took a little break because this work is, we don't get paid. And, you know, it's really emotionally draining.
I was going to ask, you know, how do you deal with that? You're looking at these horrible, gruesome things in your free time. Like, how do you kind of compartmentalize?
I get asked that a lot and I don't know how to answer it. Like I said before, Michelle McNamara was kind of like a hero to me. And, you know, she was self-medicating because, I mean, she went down some dark path, you know, in her search for the Golden State Killer. And I'm not comparing myself to her in any way because she is a freaking queen, right? May she rest in peace. But I definitely understand. I mean, I've gone down some dark paths in this and looking at this imagery and dealing with like just horrible human beings, like just terrible. And I think that's one of the reasons I kind of took a little break for the past 4 years or so on this is it catches up with you. And I'm much more introverted than I was. That's nothing to do with the pandemic. Like, I was happy to stay home alone during the pandemic. Like, I'm happy with that. Like, I don't want to see people. I don't have to talk to anybody. I'm not responsible for, you know, entertaining people. I'm not, you know, whatever. It changes you. I mean, I had to go to therapy.
Yeah.
I really don't know how to answer that succinctly because it's so complex.
Yeah.
But you really can't get into this line of investigation if you're not mentally like rock solid. You just can't.
That's, and also like having the awareness that you need to take precautions for yourself and your mental health and everything right. like that when you go
100%.
Into
this. And I recognized that I had to take a step back. We worked on a case in 2015. That like changed me. Like it really got me. That's when I took over. That's when I was like, I had to step back. And everybody did at the same time, kind of like the same, because it does wear you down. It just wears you down. And you know, we're doing all this work, and the case in 2015, the guy got 50 years in federal prison. 50 wow. years.
Wow. Which and case we caught was him that?
In 2 days. So it was Ashley, Brent Justice. It was a crush case. And I don't recommend anybody look that up. But it's an animal crush case and it's a federal crime.
Oh.
And it was the first case in the United States ever tried. And wow. we found this guy in 2 days, like 2 days. But the shit we had to go through to find him, like
a lot of the
people who are into these crush, this crush world are also like pimps and they're involved in human trafficking. So it's not just, it's not just an animal. It's not just that. It's so much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so that case really messed me up. And I had to kind of like, all right, I'm going to really start self-medicating if I can, like get some mental peace.
Support.
And you have to kind of step back. And that's what I did.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I kind of feel like, especially since 2019, there's been this rise of just like internet sleuths on various platforms.
Oh, yeah.
So what are your thoughts on all this? I know it's definitely like tricky. There's obviously mm-hmm. a line between helping and hurting. And, you know, mm-hmm. what are your personal thoughts on that?
People aren't going to like what I have to say about it.
Okay.
Like everything that we did. And this isn't really shown in the documentary, but everything that we did was private. Like Luca didn't really know all the shit that we were doing because it was all private. Mm-hmm. And then we would release things to the public group that we wanted him to know. Right. So we kind of used that group to kind of like, anyway,
like the carrot dangling. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kind of. Yeah. Cause we knew he was in there and we got to engage with him many times because of that. So a lot of the sleuths today on like Twitter and Instagram and TikTok or whatever, they're very performative. And I think a lot of them are doing it for likes and they're like publicly doxing people. Like
mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of that. If you're doing something and it's good, like, I mean, I love it, but when you publicly do it, it's a little weird and it's almost like showing off. Like,
mm-hmm.
look at this. I found this guy and you know, and people always ask me, how come you don't make videos of, you know, whatever? And I'm like, 'cause I don't want that kind of attention. First of all, I don't want to give the person that I'm looking for any attention at all. Mm-hmm. I don't want anybody to really know how I did it. Like, why would you show mm-hmm. the criminal how you found them so that other criminals hide their tracks? Like,
true. You know, yeah.
Keep it secret. Let them make the same mistakes over and over again. Like, you know, because you're messing up our next investigation, you know, because they're going to hide their whatever. But I do think that it does do the greater good. Like, I do think they're doing positive work, you know, and there's some really great ones. Like, I mean, like the big ones like Bellingcat. Bellingcat is phenomenal, and the way that they do and apply OSINT is like the standard. There are a bunch of journalists who have like really good ethics, and they would never do like this performative, mm-hmm. you know, sleuthing. but I do think in the long run, like, you remember the Boston bomber thing?
Yes, mm-hmm. I was going to say that.
Oh, you were? Okay. So that all happened on Reddit, mm-hmm. and I watched it happen. And I was just like, oh my God, this is not going to be good. And, yeah. and you know, they, they were doing the same thing that this the Luca big public group was doing. They were just like posting people who were wearing a backpack and, you know, this is the bomber, they're wearing a backpack. And, you know, it really went downhill very quickly. So you have to be really careful. And I wish these performance like sleuthing things would kind of go away. Because people are always like, well, how come Body Movement doesn't do that? Well, I mean, I have ethics. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. You know? And if you get it wrong, like that's just
right.
damage that you yeah. really can't undo.
I saw that happen.
Right.
With Jamzy and the big group. Like I saw it happen. And the guy killed himself.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. It's
so, you know, it's just not something that I enjoy.
I feel it's almost a hard thing where, like, when the internet first started, people were like, oh, it doesn't matter because we don't know what the internet is. And then we all understood the severity and the ramifications that could come from kind of like a reckless posting or something like that. But now it's kind of gone into like an inverse of it where it's like, nothing matters because I just want to be all over the internet and like almost like reality isn't worth it because the internet I can benefit and thrive here.
Right.
It's very
yeah. intense. Meanwhile, your real life is shit, right? But on the internet, it's like, ooh, look at me, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Are there any cases like recently, maybe not ones that you're involved with, but just kind of like because like we're seeing such a influx of now like. Scams coming to light and a lot of things like that. Are there any cases that you kind of like, maybe in hindsight, you're like, oh, I would have like been really interested to like investigate that or anything along those lines?
That's a good question. No.
No.
You know what's weird? Well, not weird, I guess. In order for me to have interest in a case, I have to have like the feeling about it. Like I have to have a really strong feeling about it. And like you mentioned scams, right? And I feel like bad for people who get scammed, but at the same time, I'm also like, you deserve to learn this lesson. Mm. Like, you know, if something's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. Like, don't be stupid. My inbox is full of it. Like, help me. I just got scammed out of, you know, this money or
oh boy.
my boyfriend is trapped in Canada, but there's this chest of jewels, like, and I'm like,
oh my god, no.
Like, I'm a Nigerian prince and everything.
Right. So, like, in order for me to get involved in something, I have to have like an intense feeling about it. Like, it's got to hit me in the feels, and there really hasn't been anything.
That's fair.
That has hit me in the feels recently, like nothing, and I haven't done anything in a while. But yeah, I mean, we're working on our own stuff that I don't want to talk about. I can't, I don't want to mention because I don't want to tip any hats, mm-hmm. but it's just, you have to have some sort of lust for a case in order to like be effective at it, I think, mm-hmm. because you have to be able to dedicate so much time. And if you don't like the case you're working on, I just don't feel like you're going to be very effective.
There's no pull for it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry case is interesting. I think that online sleuthing had a lot to do with, well, I know for a fact it did, and I can't say how I know for a fact, but I do know for a fact that the reason we got the police tape of them in Utah is because of sleuthing.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I know for, I really can't say because my source would be upset, but yeah, I know for a fact that the reason we had that was because of sleuthing, and some incredible work by like one person.
Wow.
All alone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
incredible. Wow. And I, yeah. So, I mean, that's great. You know, like when we're talking about, what do I think about, you know, current events, sleuthing and whatnot. Like that example that I just gave is incredible. And you know, he didn't make all these big posts about it and he didn't make right. videos saying, you know, but yeah, that's amazing. Like when I found this out, I was like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And when I found out how they did it, it was so simple. So simple.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a big, almost, it's like a big pool because for every like one person who did that, who helped that video get released, there were like, you know, a million other people just like posting like TikToks that didn't really add anything.
Mm-hmm. And there were people like that looked like Brian Landry.
That were being
like accosted in bars.
So
and stuff,
many
like.
People.
Oh, God, yeah.
So I was in London for CrimeCon and kind of when all this kind of went down. And so I was like not really paying attention to anything that was going on. And when I got home, I, you know, finally got online and checked my Instagram, you know, all my socials and my emails and stuff. And it was just like, you got to help us find Brian Landry. You got to help us find. And I'm like, unbelievable. I'm like, I'm not going to find Brian Landry, guys. Come on. That's not how this works. Like, I need, like, the what I do, you it has to be something that was happened online. Like, it needs to be a video.
Because you're a digital expert. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. It, like, come on, people. No. Yeah. So, I mean, I had to make a video on TikTok about it because like, I was getting so inundated. I had like thousands and thousands of tags. I'm like, what do you guys want me to do? Like,
do you feel not desert? Even from a TikTok point of view, but just in the sense like TikTok now exists from 2 years ago and everything like that. And since you are such what like you said, like you need something to happen online and have evidence like that. Is it hard to keep up with all these? Like, I feel like almost every day now. There's a new website or a new workaround and things like that.
Yeah, it is hard. It's harder. You know what's weird? This is going to sound crazy. Even though like the tools are more advanced, it's harder because people are more careful. So like there's new, like when TikTok came out, I'm like, oh, great. That's another freaking tech I have to learn. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then like Snapchat's been a big problem. This is something that didn't exist because it disappears.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And there's no search. There's no ability to like really search on Snapchat or TikTok. And it's like things could just be gone. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny. As the tools have gotten better to find people, like the OSINT tools and whatnot, people have become smarter too. Mm. Like they know. So I try not to make any videos showing people how I do stuff because I want them to make those mistakes.
Yes.
And I mean, I've even had to make videos calling people out like, stop it. Stop showing people how you found them.
Because it's that hard thing where it's like, I'm sure they want to be like, oh, I want everyone to know like this awesome thing I did, which is great. But then it's like, keep it. You have to subvert the.
Yes. The
any notoriety or things. The urge. Yes. With that.
You have to kind of press that down for the greater good. And I get it. I get wanting to be like, look what I did. No, I totally get it. You can't do that though.
That's why everyone should have, they should get dogs. And you probably, I'm sure you tell your dog, like, look at this amazing thing I did. And they're like,
yes.
Great. And then no one has to know besides you too. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And it's perfect.
Sure,
yeah.
With your pets.
So, I mean, you spend so much time just like researching cases and everything like that. Do you ever watch true crime documentaries or shows to unwind or is it too much?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
I am a true crime fan. Yes. I will fall asleep to Dateline.
Yes.
Very easy. I mean, like Keith Morrison, like I'm a true crime fan. Some of my favorite documentaries are true crime. Actually, they all are. Yes. I'm a huge true crime fan.
Oh my gosh. Have you watched anything lately? We just watched the Way Down Part 2.
The Gacy tapes were really good. That's one of the cases that I really follow. That was a good one. And I liked it because like his lawyer was on the show talking about things that Gacy had told him, which is incredible. So that one was good. That was recent. What other one was really good? That was recent. But yes, I watched them all. My favorites are The Keepers. Incredible.
Yep.
Like Gemma, oh my God, Gemma posted on my Facebook one day and I almost had a heart attack. I was so excited.
Oh my gosh.
Love her. The Keepers was phenomenal. I thought I'll Be Gone in the Dark. Mm-hmm. Incredible. It's the guy with the pipe bomb around his neck, the crazy lady.
Oh, Evil Genius?
Evil Genius, thank you.
Oh, that one was so wild.
I love that one.
That was
crazy. Oh, that one was so good. It's probably my top like five, I would say. This isn't really a true crime documentary. It kind of is, but Dear Zachary.
Oh, yeah.
God. Ugh. That just
tearjerker.
Yeah.
I just can't.
That's one of those ones.
I'm a huge true crime fan. And my mom was growing up. So, aww. I mean, I grew up listening to, you know, Forensic Files and whatever. Yes. So, yeah, you know, in fact, this is kind of a weird thing, but my mom fell asleep to Forensic Files every night. And in 2016, she moved in with me because she became ill. And so she moved in with me so I could help take care of her. Well, as time went on, she got sicker and sicker and sicker. And in 2020, she passed. But the reason I'm telling the story is the night she died, can you put Forensic Files on?
No.
Yes, I swear to God. So of course I did, you know. So she, so it's part of my blood, you know what I mean? Like,
she
it's part
went
of,
out as she loved, yes. Love, oh my gosh, she, yeah.
Exactly. Can you put Forensic Files on? So, oh, my God, okay.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
I do too. It's one of my favorite sweet. Stories about her. You put Forensic Files. Okay, Mom, you got it.
I love that. And I mean, you're in, just, it's obviously, like you said, you even need to take breaks and anything, everything like that. And that you're so entrenched with all this. Do you have like a hobby that just helps you unwind and kind of away from all of this?
Yeah.
Or just sleeping? Because you might need, I feel like you're probably, yeah.
Yeah. So I like to make things.
Ooh.
It's kind of weird, but I make like, I have 3D printers. In fact, I have 3D printers and all this garbage on my desk.
Oh my God, our producer does 3D printing too.
Okay, yeah. So I like to make, I make little things that like light up. Oh. So I like to make like a little skeleton maybe, right? For Halloween. And then I put like LEDs in it and a circuit board. And then I program the circuit board to like light up to music, you know, or whatever. So, I mean, I like to make things and that is cool. I think it kind of like, I have ADHD. So like, I feel like it's one of the only things that I do that kind of quiets my mind a little bit and helps me kind of forget everything going on around me or forget all the bad things I just saw on the internet. And it just kind of like soldering and putting things together and coating the chips. And it calms me down.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's not a very exciting hobby, but that's what I do.
Hobbies I don't think should be exciting.
It's like a true hobby. Yeah, you're making something with your hands.
Like. My hobby is going on like a long walk. I'm like, I don't know where people are being creative with. Yeah.
And then I make cups.
What? Oh my God. I love that.
Love it.
Yeah. Isn't that cute? It's like coffee.
I love that. Oh my gosh.
And I make them for like friends and stuff like that. I don't like sell or anything like that. But
no, that's cute.
It's being a little creative.
Yeah.
Is kind of helpful because
it like nourishes that part of the brain too.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, because my work is so like cerebral and then like the sleuthing stuff that we do is like pretty cerebral too. So, cause sometimes it's just kind of fun to like just zone out and like create something pretty. Or, I like to watch a lot of TV too.
God bless. Yeah,
I like to watch a lot of TV. I'm a big TV person.
What do you watch that's not true crime?
Star Trek.
Ooh.
Love that. Paramount Plus moment, yes.
Uh-huh. I watch a lot of Star Trek, and right now there's a bunch of new Star Trek shows, so that's really fun. And because like ADHD people will often watch the same shows over and over again because we know what's going to happen and we don't have that anxiety over it. I watch the same shit over and over again. I probably watch Mindhunter and Star Trek and things like that over and over and over again because I know what's going to happen.
That's amazing.
The Unabomber is probably my favorite case.
That one is, yeah. Because I remember there was a pretty well done TV show that was inspired by it as well. Yeah.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was. I watched it at the beginning of the pandemic, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I don't remember if it was a documentary. I think I watched something too.
Oh, it was Manhunt, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was
I saw that. That was good. And I really liked one of the reasons I liked that case so much. It's like my favorite true crime case is how smart Ted Kaczynski was. Like, the dude was so smart, and he never got caught. And like for 20 something years, and it was the most expensive manhunt by the FBI ever. And I just find it really fascinating. And how they caught him was super fascinating too. They don't show this in the documentary, but the number one reason that we knew Luca was in Montreal was that, you know, I always every day would check on his sock puppets. And he had posted on, you know, back then you could see where somebody posted stuff like very easily.
Yeah.
And back then he had posted so hot on this DJ's Facebook page.
No.
And I know that's Luca because of how he so hot. And the DJ just happened to be in Montreal. And I was like, why is Luca posting? Like, how would he know this, who this little known DJ is? Anyway, so that's how we got on Montreal. And the Unabomber was caught because of linguistics, like, and how he wrote things. That's how he was caught. And so that's feel like this really, I don't know. I just, that whole case of all of it, there was never, he went to like a gas station in like, I don't remember what state. Anyway, Indiana. And he went to the bathroom and he found two pubic hairs and he picked them up off the floor.
Ew.
Took them home to Montana and put them in a bomb, hoping that they would find these pubic hairs when it exploded and blame. You know what I mean? Like there's so many details that,
wow.
Yeah. There's so many details about that case that really don't ever get talked about. Mm-hmm. But I just find that whole case fucking fascinating. Even though it's solved, the guy's in jail and whatever. I just, that case is my golden goose. You know?
Yeah.
That's my, crazy.
Yeah.
I feel we could talk to you for hours, but yeah, we need to let you go because we need to let you wake up. But thank you so much for talking with us because I know our listeners were such a fan of the documentary and you in particular, just for the work you do and everything like that. So we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us too.
Stay tuned. That's all I'll say. Stay tuned.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. We love this a teaser. Ending on,
yes.
Okay.
Some tea.
And do you have, can you say your socials for everybody to follow you in case they aren't already?
You can follow me on Instagram at Real Body Movin', and it's BAUDIMOOVN. TikTok, same thing. Facebook, you can, but you're not going to see much. I don't really do that. whatever. And then Twitter at @Deanna_Thompson. But awesome. Real Body Movin' everywhere else.
Perfect. Oh my God. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, too.
Thank you, guys.
Take care. Bye.
Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico and Sean Kilby. Our hosts are Sarah Levine and Danny Murphy. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at NATCPod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to NATC@betches.com. Betches.